Shalom, welcome to Ash JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir, and to a refuah shlema, a complete recovery, for Avraham Ben Batsheva. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers this week, we of course want to speak about the terrible terrorist massacre that took place at the Boston Marathon several days ago. And I want to say that I have no doubt that there will be further revelations that will come out in the upcoming days. Glenn Beck, for instance, has information and evidence that he has said that he intends to reveal about Saudi Arabian involvement in this terrorist atrocity. So there may be all types of additional revelations that may come out. But this week, on this program, I want to focus on what we know right now, the information that we know for sure right now, on the criminal failure of the U.S. government and the FBI to protect American citizens from Islamic terrorism. Because the U.S. government and the FBI knew that the Chechenian terrorist Tamerlan Tsarnaev, who was the elder brother involved in the Boston Marathon massacre, they knew that he was an Islamic jihadist. They knew that he was in touch with other Islamic jihadists in Chechnya and Russia. And they actually interviewed him 2 years ago. The FBI actually interviewed him 2 years ago because the Russian government informed the U.S. government about his Islamic jihadist history and his Islamic jihadist beliefs and contacts. And yet, knowing this, the U.S. government and the FBI, after interviewing him 2 years ago, let him go and let everything go on as usual. This was not a U.S. citizen. They could have easily taken action against him. They could have thrown him out of the country immediately. He was not a U.S. citizen. And yet, because of political correctness, because of cowardice, because of an unwillingness to stand up to Islamic terrorism and Islamic jihadism, the U.S. government and the FBI let it slide. And so the U.S. government and the FBI are responsible for the murder of four innocent people, including an eight-year-old boy in Boston last week. Those four murders, the blood of those four innocent people is on the hands of the U.S. government, the Obama administration, and the FBI. They could have stopped it, and because of political correctness, they didn't stop it. And so they are responsible for this murder. And this is one out of many examples where the U.S. government and the Justice Department and the State Department and the FBI have refused to take action that could have prevented Islamic terrorist attacks. For instance, here are some other examples. Anwar al-Awlaki, who was one of al-Qaeda's leading terrorist leaders and involved in planning and executing many al-Qaeda terrorist attacks. He could have easily been arrested. There were points where he could have been arrested, where he could have been stopped. But they let him go. And he went on to become a senior al-Qaeda terrorist mass murderer, a leader of all types of terrorist activities carried out by al-Qaeda. Another example. The American black Muslim Carlos Bledsoe, who opened fire on a military recruiting office in Little Rock, Arkansas in 2009, murdering a U.S. soldier and wounding a second U.S. soldier. They knew, there was information beforehand that Carlos Bledsoe was involved with Islamic jihadists and that he was filled with fanatic hatred and was a ticking time bomb. And yet nothing was done because of political correctness again. He was, not only was he a Muslim, but he was black. He was black and a Muslim. So those are two reasons to be politically correct. And nothing was done, and he went on to murder a U.S. soldier and wound the second U.S. soldier at the military recruiting office in Little Rock, Arkansas in 2009. Also in 2009, U.S. Army Major Nidal Malik Hassan. They allowed this Muslim jihadist fanatic to become a U.S. Army major. He had expressed his hatred for the United States, for Christians and Jews in the United States. He had expressed his Islamic fanatic beliefs. And still, they allowed him to continue on as a U.S. Army major. And the U.S. Army, which is also very politically correct, the U.S. military and the Pentagon are super politically correct. They didn't do anything about it. They let him continue. And he wound up in 2009 murdering 13 soldiers in Fort Hood, Texas. 13 soldiers were murdered by him in Fort Hood, Texas. Once again, the blood of those 13 soldiers is on the hands of the U.S. Army, the U.S. military, and the U.S. government that allowed him to continue. First of all, that made him a U.S. Army major. You make a Muslim who believes in a religion committed to the destruction of the United States to become a U.S. Army major? And who has a history of expressing hatred, fanatic hatred toward non-Muslims and toward the United States, and you allow him to become a U.S. Army major? The blood of those 13 soldiers that he murdered is on the hands of the U.S. Army and the U.S. military and the U.S. government that allowed him to get into this position and do the predictable thing that he wound up doing in 2009 in Fort Hood, Texas. And the worst example, there are many examples of this. This is just, I'm just giving you a few examples. But the worst example of all was after the murder of Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo, who was the first victim of Al-Qaeda terrorism in November 1990. The very first thing that Al-Qaeda did was murder Rabbi Kahana because they knew that they had to get Rabbi Kahana out of the way in order to carry out their worldwide jihad, because no one more effectively was warning people about telling the people the truth about Islamic terrorism than our great Rabbi Meir Kahana. And after he was murdered, under orders from Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman, who was a leader of Al-Qaeda and who worked with Osama bin Laden and who was actually running a big mosque, a huge mosque in Jersey City, New Jersey. And the mosque was called the Mosque of Peace. That was the name of the Mosque of Peace, an Al-Qaeda mosque called the Mosque of Peace. Sheikh Rahman ordered that murder. He ordered El Sayed Nosser, an Egyptian Muslim Nazi, to shoot and assassinate Rabbi Kahana at a meeting in New York. And the FBI and the U.S. government and the Justice Department and the New York Police Department all covered up. They said that Nosser was a lone gunman, that he was not connected to any known terrorist organizations, that he acted strictly on his own, even though there was a getaway driver waiting for him outside named Mahmoud Abu Khalima. Even though Nosser had totally airtight connections to Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and Sheikh Rahman. But the New York Police Department and the FBI, because of pure anti-Semitism, because they hated Rabbi Kahana, because they were just Jew haters, they refused to investigate any of these leads. The local district attorney charged Nosser with Rabbi Kahana's murder. The FBI and the Justice Department refused to charge Nosser and refused to charge Sheikh Rahman and the other murderers that were involved in this conspiracy. They let them go. They didn't charge them. They didn't even investigate them. Nothing. Nosser then was just charged in the local New York State court in Manhattan. And it was a farcical trial in front of an almost all-black jury, which acquitted, and they acquitted Nosser on the murder charge of Rabbi Kahana. And so the reason why this was by far the most serious incident is because this eventually led to the 9/11 attacks and to the murder of thousands of Americans. Thousands of Americans in the end were murdered because of this. Because Sheikh Rahman and these other terrorists from that New Jersey mosque, Mahmoud Abu Khalima, who was Nosir's getaway driver, Sheikh Rahman, and the other terrorists involved in the assassination of Rabbi Kahana, went on to bomb the World Trade Center the first time in 1993, murdering 6 people, injuring over 1,000, and causing over $1 billion in damage. And that set the stage for the eventual return to the World Trade Center and the murder of 3,000 Americans on 9/11. And so we have to understand that the policies of appeasing Islamic terrorism, of political correctness, of cowardice, and also in the case of Rabbi Kahana's murder, of pure anti-Semitism. All of this is what has made Americans unsafe. And Americans are very unsafe. Very unsafe. This attack on the Boston Marathon should be a wake-up call to everyone about the danger that the United States faces. Even today, we see, for instance, I'll just give you another example. El Said Nosseir eventually was convicted of conspiring to being part of the conspiracy and part of the bombing of the World Trade Center. He was involved with it up to his neck. He was also convicted eventually in federal court of violating Rabbi Kahana's civil rights, and so he was convicted of murder, the federal equivalent of murder, eventually, because we put pressure on the Justice Department and we drove them nuts. We had thousands of people, wrote to them, called them. We had a big campaign that went on. That was the original reason why JTF was formed, to get justice against the murderers of Rabbi Kahana. And so El Said Nosseir eventually was charged and he was given life without parole eventually, but that was after the World Trade Center was bombed in 1993. It took that plus our big campaign to finally get these people behind bars. But even today, after El Said Nosseir was convicted of murdering Rabbi Kahana, convicted of being involved in the World Trade Center bombing conspiracy that eventually led to the murder of thousands of Americans, I mean, how could you get more serious than that? Do you know where El Said Nosseir is today after what he did to help and conspire to murder thousands of Americans at the World Trade Center? Do you know where the federal prison system, the Federal Bureau of Prisons has put him today? He isn't even in a maximum security prison. Now, usually in a case like this, you automatically put the person in the supermax prison. There's a supermax prison in Colorado. And that's where you should put people like this. He is not in the supermax prison. You know where he is? He's in a medium security prison in Marion, Illinois. They don't even have him in a maximum security prison. They've put him now with medium security prisoners, which is an outrage. And JTF will begin a campaign to demand that he be moved to a max. He should be in the supermax prison. The supermax prison. In solitary confinement, all the time, should have no contact with the outside world. He is a clear and present danger. They carried out, one of the reasons they carried out their bombings was to demand his release. And they're not even keeping him in a maximum security prison after that? Al-Qaeda has repeatedly demanded his release and has carried out mass murders demanding his release. And he's being kept in a medium security institution? Sheikh Rahman, the other murderer, the head of that gang that murdered Rabbi Kahana, was put in a prison medical facility because they were treating him for diabetes. And so he was put in this cushy, nice federal prison that's almost like a federal hospital. And he was using his attorney to relay messages to the Al-Qaeda terrorists and the Muslim Brotherhood terrorists in Egypt, who then carried out terrorist attacks. After they got messages from him to carry out terrorist attacks, he was giving them instructions from prison on how to carry out terrorist attacks. And his own attorney, by the way, was eventually convicted of relaying these messages for him to the Al-Qaeda terrorists. I mean, this is, what a farce this is. What a farcical situation this is. We have a U.S. government and an Israeli government and the governments of Western Europe and the whole world who refuse to stand up to Islamic terrorism. Refuse. There are a number of things that we have to learn from this. Number one, that we can't trust our own governments to protect us. That's number one. That's obvious. Number two, Islam is at war with the United States, Israel, and the whole non-Muslim world. And no one in the news media, even Fox and the so-called conservative media, no one will tell us this. No one is willing to tell us the truth. Islam is at war with the entire non-Muslim world. The Islamic religion, the Quran and the Hadith command all Muslims to conquer through violence the entire world for Islam. The entire world has to be put under Dar al-Islam. Dar al-Islam is the abode of Islam. Every nation that is not Islamic, that's not under control, not under the control of Muslims, is Dar al-Kharb, under the abode of the sword. Kharb in Arabic means war. It actually means war, the abode of war. And so, Islam is at war with the whole non-Muslim world. And no one even tells us this. No one even has the courage to stand up and even tell us the truth about what's happening here and about the tremendous danger here. And this is why we're headed toward a tremendous catastrophe if, God forbid, Iran gets nuclear bombs, because the day will come, if that happens and all the Muslim countries start acquiring nuclear bombs, God forbid, the day's going to come when the nuclear bombs are going to go off in Western cities and millions of people, God forbid, can be killed. And another issue here that has to be addressed. At the very same time that this was going on in Boston, you had 8 traitor United States senators releasing a proposal to legalize all the illegal aliens, to give U.S. citizenship to all the illegal aliens, to 20 million illegal aliens that are in the United States. Give them U.S. citizenship. I mean, this is unbelievable. So the United States is going to welcome millions of Muslims into the U.S., because that's what this will lead to, because then the United States then becomes a bigger magnet for third world people, and a lot of the third world people are Muslims. And we're going to have, like these two Chechenian terrorist brothers, we're going to have millions of these types of creatures coming into the United States. There should be no citizenship for illegal aliens, no amnesty. Illegal aliens should be thrown out of the country. They're here illegally. They should be expelled. There should be a mass expulsion of all illegal aliens. They're here illegally. Marco Rubio and Rand Paul, two Republican presidential contenders. They're expected to run for the presidency in 2016. Their front runners are ready for the Republican presidential nomination. Marco Rubio and Rand Paul support giving citizenship, U.S. citizenship, to all of the illegal aliens. They are not good people. They are a disaster, not just for the Republican Party, but for America and for the world. They're a disaster. We should oppose any legislation legalizing the illegal aliens. And most of all, you know that if only JTF was a mass movement and well-funded and could reach everyone with this message, how much better this world would be. If only the truth, the pure, unadulterated, uncompromising truth was finally brought to the American people and to the people of Israel, this world would be so much safer and so much better. You know we are not allowed to be silent. It is our obligation to speak up and to spread the truth as much as possible with whatever resources we have. If you agree that this message has to be spread to as many people as possible, and that we have to try to reach as many people as possible and wake people up as quickly as possible, if you agree that that's essential in America and in Israel, then I urge you to help us. We're going to be releasing videos on this subject and on other subjects, other related subjects. When you see Hebrew and English videos on our forum, please do everything you can to promote those videos, both on Facebook and on YouTube. That means commenting, that means favoriting, that means sharing, that means to mirror the videos. Everything you can do on Facebook and on YouTube to promote the videos, it's important that this message be told and that this message reach as many people as possible. And I know you agree with that. So let's all get involved and help promote our videos as much as possible. And secondly, we need your help on the forums and on our Facebook pages. We need good threads and good subjects so we get more people involved, so we make the the forums and the Facebook pages an appealing place so more people want to get involved and active with us. So we need you for that as well. And to present a good image and a positive image and a convincing image for this movement. That's something that every one of us can help with. And finally, last but certainly not least, most importantly, we need financial support. That's our big downfall, and it has always been the big downfall for the Kahanist movement. If Rabbi Kahana had proper resources, he would have become prime minister, and maybe the Messiah would have come already. But he didn't have the proper resources to fight back when they banned him. He didn't have enough money and enough resources to fight back. And that's why we have all these tragic events unfolding. We need your support. Every check, every money order, every cash donation sent to our post office box makes a big difference. God bless the wonderful JTFers who are helping us, who are sending checks and money orders and cash donations through the regular mail to our post office box. God bless you, your family, both in this world and in the next. And God bless the great JTFers who help us by going to our main page, jtf.org, or our main Hebrew page, hayamim.org, either one. There's a donate button on top, on both pages, there's a donate button. And very conveniently, in a matter of minutes, you can donate with your credit card to our movement. God bless the great JTFers that are helping. I hope we can reach enough people in time to make a difference. We're going to do everything we can. You know that we won't be silent. You know that we're going to fight as hard as we can to wake people up. It's our obligation to do so. We already did accomplish, historically, we accomplished certain things. We did get El Sayyid Nosir and others prosecuted for the murder of Rabbi Kahana on the federal level. They weren't planning to do that. They weren't going to do that if not for the pressure that we had a campaign of several years in the 1990s where we were pushing for that. And it was a very well-organized, very, very effective campaign. We need to continue to speak out and to wake people up. It's an urgent situation, and I think that this latest massacre shows how urgent it is. I think that all of us, all of our great JTFers, understand the urgency of it. And so get involved with us. Let's work together. Let's try to save the situation, or do the best we can at least, because we're not allowed to be silent. We have to speak out. We have to do everything we can to turn the situation around. Anyway, that's our message for now. And now we're going to go to our great questions from our great JTFers. And we start off with the fantastic spiraling leopard who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, are white Muslims the biggest cowards on the planet, unquote. They're certainly among the biggest cowards on the planet, yes. Why white people in Europe, for instance, or in the United States, that don't have to embrace this evil religion, decide to become Muslims? Why they would decide to do it, it's unbelievable, it's insanity. But certainly the cowardice and the disgusting behavior and the fact that they easily blend into Western populations, which makes them more dangerous. All of that put together makes them a very serious threat. There's no question that they constitute a very serious threat. And we have to understand the nature of that threat. Anyway, thank you, Spiraling Leopard. Great point. And now we go to the Great Pyramid Head fan who writes, and I quote, share your thoughts on the new Jackie Robinson film 42, thanks in advance, unquote. Well, obviously I haven't seen the film and I have no intention of seeing it, but all of these films that glorify black culture and blacks advancing and blacks basically taking over the United States, because that's basically what has happened. I mean, we have a black president and you're not allowed to say or do or expose anything about black crime or about anything else involving black racism, black anti-Semitism. Any film that promotes that and that promotes this political correctness is a disaster, is terrible. So this film about making Jackie Robinson into some sort of hero because he was able to play baseball, because he's a black guy that was allowed to play baseball and integrate the baseball teams. Now, the film a film like this only does damage. Anyway, thank you, Pyramid Head fan. And now we go to our friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, was your name ever Victor Vance here? And if so, when and why did you change it, unquote. Yes, my English name was Victor Vance here, and I changed it because every Jew has a Hebrew name. And my Hebrew name is Chaim ben Pesach. Every Jew, when called before the Torah, has a Hebrew name. And Chaim ben Pesach has always been my Hebrew name, always. My English name was Victor Vance here. Anyway, thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to our good friend Obama is Trash, who writes, and I quote, Luc Besson is a white French producer who makes films glorifying blacks, Muslims, and ridiculing whites. One of his films has a black as U.S. president, unquote. Well, his film has become the story of our lives. It's not just a film anymore. I mean, we have a black guy who's a Muslim and who's a racist and a Jew hater in the White House, and we have him there now for 5 years already. It's more than a film. It's a nightmare. Of course, anybody that makes films like this and that creates this situation like all of the Hollywood filth have been doing, they're destroying America. They're destroying Western civilization. The Israeli filmmakers are destroying Israel. It's a horrible situation, and we have to fight against them. Anyway, thank you, Obama is Trash. And now we go to the great super Zionist, who writes, and I quote, Brother Nathaniel Kapner became a Jew-hating Nazi. Joseph Cohen, Yusuf al-Khattab, became a Quranimal who wants to exterminate Jews. Who is sicker, unquote. Oh, they're both equally sick. They're both equally sick. I mean, these are just such disgusting, hideous beasts. You know, unfortunately, we have this phenomenon where a large percentage of Jews, because for thousands of years the Jews have been hated and were a hated minority and were persecuted by the whole world, because of this, the Jews became crazy. And a large percentage of the Jews, unfortunately, became self-hating. A large percentage of Jews are self-hating. And so we see these are two extreme examples of how this manifests itself. And these self-hating Jews, they not only become a threat to the Jewish people, they become a threat to all of society. They embrace the most evil people, and they become a threat to all of society. Anyway, thank you, Super Zionist. And now we go to the great Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, you once said that Jews shouldn't visit either Germany nor Poland because of their anti-Semitism. Does this also apply to Bible-believing Christians, unquote? Great question, and I think it does. I think it does. I think to visit countries that murdered millions of God's people, millions of innocent Jews, I think that that's a sin. I think it's a sin, and obviously, you know, Jews or Gentiles are not supposed to be committing sins. Jews and Gentiles are both required to live moral lives and stand up for morality. Thank you, Da Vinci. And now we move on to the fantastic Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, Hezekiah's opposition were the wicked majority. God said not to follow them. Why were they wicked? Was the surrender the wickedness of itself or something else, unquote. The fact that the majority wanted to surrender was indeed an act of wickedness. You have to remember, Tag Mechir, that this was a generation of Torah scholars, that Chizkiyahu in English is King Hezekiah of Yehudah, of Judea, he gave a very thorough Torah education to the people of Yehudah, of Judea. They received a very thorough, a very thorough Torah education. So there was no excuse. They did not have real faith, and they feared human beings more than they feared Hashem, and they didn't want to listen to the prophets. And they wanted to surrender, even though it would have been a terrible chilul Hashem, and that's very bad behavior. Anyway, thank you, Tag Mechir. And now we move on to our friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what is your opinion of Curtis Sliwa and the Guardian Angels, unquote. I don't like Curtis Sliwa, and I don't like the Guardian Angels. Curtis Sliwa, first of all, is really just a closet anti-Semite. He frequently spoke about dual loyalty and would always ask Jews if they're loyal to the United States or loyal to Israel, which is the most absurd question you can possibly ask. When it comes to Israel and the Jewish people, that is one group you cannot ask that question of. You know why? Because if you're not loyal to Israel, you're not loyal to the United States. It says in the Bible, I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. If you curse Israel, you're cursing your own country. Anyone who's against Israel is signing a death warrant for their, or a death sentence for their own country and their own people and their own society. So it's absurd to say, are you loyal to Israel, loyal to the United States? If you're loyal to the United States, then you have to be loyal to Israel. Because God says so. That's what the Bible says. But anyway, Curtis Sliwa doesn't believe in that. Curtis Sliwa was just a big fraud. He's an admitted liar, an admitted fraud. He himself filed false police reports with his phony group, the Guardian Angels, a group of blacks, a mostly black street gang type people that he claimed were going to guard people on the subways. Please, give me a break. And he filed false police reports and made up all types of stories. He actually claimed at one point that he was kidnapped by the police and they threatened him. The transit police threatened him that he's not allowed to patrol the subways anymore with the Guardian Angels and something terrible is going to happen to him. He filed a phony report of being supposedly kidnapped and threatened. He filed all types of phony police reports, which he admitted were phony police reports. I mean, he is just an attention-seeking fraud and has always been an attention-seeking fraud. He also had a program for years on the radio with Ron Cuby. Ron Cuby, who defended the World Trade Center 9/11 bombers. The WTC bombers were defended pro bono for free by Ron Cuby. Pro bono is for free, that's right. Pro bono by Ron Cuby and William Kunstler, his law partner. And Curtis Sliwa had a program which he co-hosted with this animal, with this mass supporter of terrorist mass murderers, who for free represents Muslim terrorist mass murderers? what type of immoral creature is this? So I don't like Curtis Sliwa, and I don't like the Guardian Angels. Anyway, thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to the fantastic Nachus. Nachus writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think was Rabbi Meir Kahana Zatzal's most prolific speech, thank you, unquote. That's a very hard question, Nachus, because he made so many great speeches. He made so many speeches that had such a great influence. For me to identify and pinpoint one speech would be very, very hard for me to do. He made some great speeches speaking to the Israeli public, for instance, on Israeli street. He used to speak on Israeli street corners when he was a member of the Knesset and get huge crowds. Huge crowds would come to hear him speak. He also made great speeches in the Israeli Knesset, in the Israeli parliament. Very important speeches where he was educating the people of Israel and teaching them things that no one had ever said to them before. So it's hard for me to identify any one particular speech. And I'm speaking about his speeches in Hebrew now to the Israeli Jews. His speeches in English, in synagogue appearances and other public appearances where he taught American Jews the truth about history, about Judaism, about our obligation to love our fellow Jews and fight for our fellow Jews. All of these things were just such magnificent lectures and speeches and opened people's eyes. So it's hard for me to pinpoint any one because so many of his speeches were on such a high level, were so fantastic. And someday, Nachus, when true Kahanists take over the Israeli government someday, and someday that's going to happen. Someday when that happens, it will be required learning. Every Jewish kid in school, every Jewish soldier in the army, it will be required learning to watch Rabbi Meir Kahana's speeches and read his books and learn what he taught. That will be required learning, because nothing could be more educational than what Rabbi Kahana was teaching us. Thank you, Nachus. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, who is the voice of reason, common sense, and logic. Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, "If big government, fascism, etc. are left-wing, what are monarchies and righteous big governments? What would a Torah monarchy be?" Unquote. Okay, great question. Well, first of all, I don't know that a Torah monarchy would be a big government. Big government to me means a government that spends huge amounts of money, takes a huge amount of your salary and everything you earn out of your paycheck, and everything you earn is taken away from you either with income taxes or other types of taxes, income taxes, property taxes, all the other taxes that big government uses to steal money from people. I don't think a Torah monarchy would do that. A Torah monarchy would not do that. A Torah monarchy would want to leave as much money in the pockets of the citizens as possible. So I don't think it would be a big government. It would not. A Torah monarchy would not encourage people to be dependent on government programs. A Torah monarchy instead would want to educate people to be independent. Of course, we do care for the poor, and of course we care for the elderly, and of course we care for the people who really need our help. We do care about that, and the Torah requires us to care for those people. But the best way to help in general, to help people, as long as they're physically fit, if someone's physically fit, the best way to help them is to make them independent. Independent of handouts, independent of government. And that means not a big government, but a government as small as possible. And government should be as small as possible. The average people, citizens, should be able to keep as much as of their money as possible. And citizens should have rights and not be dictated to by the government unless there's an absolute need for the sake of national security or some basic need that society has. Unless there's an absolute need, generally speaking, we want to give citizens maximum rights, minimum taxation, and maximum freedom through and freedom within a Torah society. So I don't think a Torah monarchy would be a big government. I don't think we would have a big government under a Torah monarchy. People would be freer. People would be better educated. People would be more prosperous, safer, and far more Jewish if there were a Torah monarchy. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to our friend Eli Yitzchaki, who is also very active on the Hebrew Forum. Eli Yitzchaki writes, and I quote, "Have you ever had any personal contact with Irv and or Shelley Rubin?" Unquote. Okay, let's start with that. Of course, I knew Irv Rubin for many years, and yes, I did have contact with him. My relations with him were very poor relations. Irv Rubin turned against Rabbi Kahana and against me. He condemned Rabbi Kahana. And he condemned me when I was leading the campaign to free Soviet Jews. Irv Rubin took positions which I felt, and which Rabbi Kahana, which both of us saw, were betrayed all of the JDL principles. And so we did not get along well with Irv Rubin at all. Shelley Rubin, his wife, no, we did not have any contact with her. I don't know her personally. I just know what she's written about me and about Rabbi Kahana and how she supported the expulsion of the Jews from Gush Katif, and how she supported all types of terrible things, and her husband Irv Rubin have supported some terrible people in Hollywood, terrible self-hating Jews in Hollywood, and have done a lot of things that we felt were very harmful to the Jewish people, unfortunately. Eli Yitzchaki also writes, "And do you think Judaism relates more to socialism or to capitalism?" Unquote. A Judaism is not socialism and it's not capitalism. It's certainly not socialism. Socialism believes in worshiping the government and in having the government control everything and the government dictate everything. That is not the Jewish way. That certainly is not the Jewish way. So socialism is the antithesis of Judaism. Capitalism, if you have a free market where you encourage legitimate and fair competition, and give consumers big choices because there's lots of competition. If that's the definition of capitalism, then that would be something that is good. But if you have a situation where you have a handful of billionaires controlling everything behind the scenes, which is, you know, the crony capitalism and the monopoly capitalism that you have now in the United States, Israel, and Western countries, you have, it's sort of half socialistic and half monopoly capitalism. That's the worst combination you can have. We want a free market where people will be free to prosper and free to flourish and free to open businesses and free to earn good salaries and good living so that they'll have more time to devote to learning Torah and to being good Jews. That's what Judaism wants. And that's what we want in Israel. Anyway, thank you, Eli Yitzchaki. And now we go to Vivarto, who writes, and I quote, Rand Paul said that an attack on Israel should be considered an attack on the United States, unquote. Yeah, that's a completely phony statement that he made. He's not in any way interested in the survival of Israel. He's an anti-Semite like his father, Ron Paul, is. Rand Paul, as a senator, worked to prevent even economic sanctions on Iran. He was the only senator to vote against economic sanctions on Iran. So not only is he against military action to protect the United States, Israel, and the Western world from the danger of an Iranian nuclear terrorist nightmare, but he also even has opposed economic sanctions. His evil father, Ron Paul, whom he enthusiastically supported and worked for when Ron Paul ran for president, his Nazi father, went on Iranian terrorist television and compared Israel to the Nazis and said that Gaza is like a concentration camp and defended Muslim terrorist bomb throwers. He said they're just making homemade bombs. He said all they're doing is making homemade bombs, and he was clearly supporting and justifying Muslim terrorism against Israel and accused Israel of being like the Nazis instead of accusing the Muslim Nazis of being the Muslim Nazis really are Nazis. And admit that they're Nazis. In their own media, they praise Hitler and they praise the Nazis and call for genocide. But Ron Paul and Rand Paul defend them and protect them. That they would never speak about because they're Jew haters and because they're disloyal to the United States. So these phony statements that he makes, now he makes some phony statements. He tries to paper over what he stood for all these years because he wants support from evangelical Christians when he runs for the Republican presidential nomination in 2016. That's why he suddenly makes a trip to Israel and pretends that he is not really as anti-Israel as he really is. He's trying to pretend he's not, because he doesn't want the evangelical Christians in Iowa and in other key states where there are primaries and caucuses to be against him when he runs for president. But it's completely phony. And now, the next question is from our great friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, Irv Rubin's son, Ari, committed suicide. Why do you think he did so? How does this affect his mother's fake JDL organization? Unquote. I don't know why Ari Rubin committed suicide. Obviously, that's a tragedy that he committed suicide. I'm not happy that he committed suicide, even though he said terrible things about me. And he did say some terrible things about me. He called me a terrorist and said some terrible things about me. And his father, of course, also not only said but did terrible things. His father also committed suicide. By the way, his father was in prison and committed suicide while he was in prison. Why he did, I don't know. It's a tragic situation. I obviously I'm not fond of the Rubin family and what they've done, but you know, this is a tragic situation, and I'm not happy when you see something so tragic like this. It doesn't make me happy. It doesn't give me any joy to see them committing suicide. As far as his mother's fake JDL organization, the JDL has not existed as an organization ever since I went to prison. That was the end of the JDL. When I went to prison, that ended the JDL in the United States. There is a JDL in Britain. In Great Britain, you have a real JDL, a very, very good and active JDL, a great organization in Britain. But in the United States, The organization died when I went to prison in the late 1980s. That was the end of the JDL. The thing that the Rubens then pretended that they were running a JDL. They took the name, but everything they did was against everything JDL ever stood for. So that's not JDL. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And now we go to our great friend Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, "Well, well, well, lo and behold, the Boston Marathon terrorists turned out to be Chechenian Muslim Nazis. No form of torture would be enough for them," unquote. I agree 1,000%, Gimatria. 1,000%. And how I wish we were handling the interrogation. We'd get the information out of them. Gimatria, you are so right. And you know, I mean, one of the things that the rabbis teach us in the Talmud is, if you are kind to the cruel, in the end you are going to be cruel to the kind. And that's one of the things we learn from all of this. The people who are kind to Muslim terrorists end up being cruel to the victims of Muslim terrorism. If you're kind to the cruel, in the end you're going to be cruel to the kind. That's one of the great things that Torah Judaism teaches us. And it is, you look in history and it is so true. It is so true in every situation. Thank you, Gimatria. And now we go to our fantastic JTFer waiting for the mother plane to come, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, do you suspect that Fakistinian American soldier Malik Nidal Hassan will be found not guilty by reason of insanity and released?" Unquote. God forbid. God forbid. I certainly hope not. He's someone that I spoke about in my opening. He murdered 13 soldiers in Fort Hood, Texas in 2009. He was a U.S. Army major. A U.S. Army major. And murdered 13 U.S. soldiers. Because the Army was crazy enough out of political correctness to make him an Army major and give him the ability to carry out this monstrous massacre. I hope that the insanity defense or any other defense that he puts forward, I hope that it fails, because that would be a real horror. I mean, if he doesn't get the death penalty, I mean, it's just, if you know, they didn't give the death penalty to the World Trade Center bombers. They didn't give them the death penalty. And I'm talking about Sheikh Rahman and El Sayed Nasser, and they never got the death penalty. They also should, of course, get the death penalty. These monsters that don't get the death penalty, it's an unbelievable miscarriage of justice. Just atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. Thank you, waiting for the mother plane. And now we go to the fantastic Ruby Stars, who writes, and I quote, "If certain mitzvot are commandments, if certain mitzvot can only be practiced by Jews in Israel, is the flip side of that sins might be punished more harshly if committed in Israel?" Unquote. That is a great question, Ruby Stars, a fantastic question, and the answer is probably yes. The answer is probably yes, that committing certain sins in Israel it's even more serious than committing them outside the land of Israel. Yes, the answer is probably yes, but we're commanded to live in Israel, and so just the mere fact that a Jew lives outside of Israel is a very serious sin, a very serious sin. Whereas the mere fact that a Jew lives in the land of Israel is a huge mitzvah, is very much in favor of that Jew. I mean, it says in the Talmud, he who lives in the land of Israel, it is as if, and it's referring to Jews, of course, here we're referring to Jews, he who lives in the land of Israel, it is as if he has a God, and he who lives outside the land of Israel, it is as if he has no God. So a Jew who lives outside of Israel, it's as if he has no God, because God clearly commands that we live in Israel, and if you're living outside, you're ignoring God. It's as if there is no God. So Jews are required to live in Israel, even though they probably are judged more sharply for what they do in the Holy Land. There probably is some truth to that. Thank you very much, Ruby Stars. Great question. And now we go to the great Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, why are liberals usually so fat and obese? Thanks and God bless," unquote. Confederate Kahanist, I haven't noticed that. That I haven't noticed, at least not here in New York. I don't know, maybe where you are, maybe that is true. Here in New York, I haven't noticed that. But I have noticed one thing. Liberals are usually ugly. I don't know what, and not always. You have some liberals that may be very attractive, true, and you have some conservatives that are ugly. Okay, you know. And of course, the main thing, we don't judge people mainly on how somebody looks. The main thing we're concerned about is what's in someone's heart. How somebody looks is not the most important thing. The most important thing is if the person is a good, righteous person. But for some reason, a lot of these liberals, most of these liberals are so damn ugly. I mean, I don't know what it is. They are so damn ugly. At least here in New York. That I have noticed. And I don't know, people can come up with their theories as to why that is, or whether their ugliness causes them to be angry with God and angry with the world, and maybe that's why they become liberals. Who knows? But that's something I've seen all my life. Thank you, Confederate Congress. And by the way, it's true in Israel as well. The leftist Israelis are so ugly. The right-wing Israelis are very attractive, generally speaking, in most cases. And, you know, why that's true? Again, I guess people can make their own analysis as to why that might be true. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And now we go to the fantastic Ephraim Ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, "I know the U.S. government is in bed with Muslim terrorists. What do you think?" Unquote. Ephraim, you are 100% correct. And Ephraim, if only people had as much common sense as you do. What a better world this would be. If only people were as wise as you are and logical as you are, this would be a much better world that we live in. Thank God that you at least can see reality and understand what's going on here. Thank God. Thank you, Ephraim. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I think was important to do. I think we got a lot of information on the program this week. Until next week, Shalom.